Collision, where sports and politics smash. Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone. From the county, from another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
What'd
I do?
Okay,
turn around.
Put your hands behind your back. Let's go. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What? Come on. Get that set.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. This is Roach Brown, and we come to you every Tuesday live from WPFW 89.3 FM. WPFW is heard around the world. The first Tuesday of each month, we come to you live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl. And I just want to mention that Ben's has opened up another location. The other location is at Dulles Airport. So Ben is on the rise and they're moving. And I want to say thanks to the family and all the support that we've been receiving at Ben's Chili Bowl, because Ben is leaving a mark that can't be beat. Thank you for allowing us to broadcast live every first Tuesday from the world famous Ben's Chili Bowl. This morning, I'll be bringing to you the 2 hours all by myself. My wife is dealing with an emergency. And our co-host, none other than the distinguished attorney Nikeecha Taifa, just got back in from her travels all around the country. So I'll be bringing you the show this morning by myself. Hopefully one or two, they will call in. But if they don't, it doesn't make no difference. Crossroads go on. We're always opening up with what we call the grapevine. We're going to dispense with most of the grapevine, but we're going to open up with this segment of the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Last week, we brought you a show about the high cost of telephone rates in New Jersey with a young lady named Marlena Ubel with the New Jersey Policy Perspective. And she talked about the high cost of phones in New Jersey, but the same thing is applicable, apply to all prisons and jails across the country. Ironically, yesterday, my wife and I went down to Charles County Detention Center in Southern Maryland. The sister friend, we put some money on the phone, $10 on the person's phone for them to make phone calls, and they charge us $4.90 tax. I asked the question, is it state or federal tax? They charge us 50% of what we deposit. So we call back an hour later to add another $5 to the person's phone account, and they charge us $2.60 on top of the $5. So this is, we just did the show last week. Folks, the way they're ripping people off at these prisons and jails for the phone prices is off the chart. And we got hit with this yesterday. So this is not something that someone is relaying to us. This is what we experienced yesterday. And secondly, school buses are going through a lot of stuff. Why is it that only the driver on the school bus has a seatbelt and none of the kids who ride the school buses have safety belts? This is joogie boogie at its finest. This is more bull crap, y'all. Why is it we recognize that the driver of the bus need a seatbelt, but all the little kiddies that's on the bus do not have one? Folks, somebody need to look into this. That's been what we talked about for Grapevine. Thank you for listening. We're doing an abbreviated program this morning since I'm the only one here. And I don't have any support except for my good technician, Mr. Mo Thomas and Guillermo and Mo and Mike Nasella. So that's been the grapevine for this morning. It's been an abbreviated grapevine. Now we get to our topic for the show. This morning, we have a young man who we just met recently. His name is Dr. Ted Sutton, CEO and founder of the Sutton House Visions Incorporated. He's a trained, certified gang intervention specialist, and he works, amongst other things, with several groups, but one is called Men Against Murder. Good morning, Dr. Ted Sutton. How are you doing?
I'm blessed, brother. I'm blessed. It's good to be here on this morning.
And thank you for joining us from Baltimore. Last week, we had somebody on from New Jersey. Now we're doing Baltimore. Crossroad goes worldwide. This is one of the few shows that deal with justice, impact, individuals, and issues. And we bring people in from all over the country calling in or Zooming in to make sure that we can bring you information that you need. Dr. Sutton, you want to tell us what your program is all about in terms of what you're doing in the community, Men Against Murder? That's one of the programs that you're doing. But give us a little brief bio of who you are, sir.
All right. Well, just real quick, and also I to make sure I don't forget, you know, in any kind of way, Brother Dennis Wise told me to tell you hello when I came on, and also my cousin, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. He definitely said he's looking forward to speaking with you. He wanted me to. He told me that late last night. He said, make sure you tell him I said, you know, hello, and also great honor and respect. So I want to get that out the way. He ain't getting me in trouble.
Thank you.
And it's good when I'm able to talk to people who have the utmost respect for a brother that's doing the same work we're doing.
So
really just a brief background and also just telling where I came from. My grandfather was one of the deacons for defense that fought against the Klan. My father organized for Dr. King at Southern and Grambling University. My mother worked for Megan Evers, you know, at Jackson State University and at the NAACP in Mississippi. And then also my uncle was a Black Panther with Bunchy Carter, and my cousin started the new Black Panther, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. And so that's the DNA I come from. Now, the street part, actually, my godfather was a man named Little Melvin Williams, and his godfather was Julius Delores Salisbury, and then his godfather was a man named Meyer Lansky. And that was just how that was. And then also, and my mentor and a good brother now, even today, and works with me with Men Against Murder is the known Dennis Wise.
So
even though I'm Dr. Ted Sutton, if anybody ever Googles Crazy Ted,
your nickname was Crazy, huh? They called
crazy
you. Why
Ted.
Did they call you Crazy?
Man, I'm gonna tell you what's so funny is that I actually tell my youth that I speak to choose your friends. Don't let your friends choose you, because in middle school, some boys tried to take. I was at this new school. These boys tried to take the three Butter Crunch cookies that used to come in the pack off my tray, man, and walk off, man. And I was like, if I let this go, it's going to be happening all year. And I stepped to all seven of them, and I was by myself, and I snatched them back, and I told them, yo, for real, and this is the crazy part, and I have to put the disclaimer, don't try this at home. I told them, you're going to have to kill me to get these cookies. And what was so crazy when I think about it, I think in hindsight, that may have been a little bit overkill. But I say that to say that they was like, man, you know, he must don't know who we are, or he must be crazy. And really, I ain't know who they was. So when they wrote the series The Wire, they were the younger people that were actually doing the car stealing, the stealing the cars and taking them to chop shops and different things of that nature. And that was how I got hooked up with that crew. And they gave me the name Crazy Ted. And the unfortunate part about it is that I didn't feel that I was really crazy, but I felt that I was willing to go at any length to get my respect.
Yes.
And so, you know, and that was just pretty much just, you know, how that was. And I was spending more time with my friends than my parents. So it became more important to how they viewed me, you know, than it was to appease my parents that I may only see a couple of hours a day and then on weekends. And so, you know, for me, that was pretty much just how that started. So I ended up hooking up with one of the roughest groups that they had here. And, you know, and then I was known for carrying big heat, big guns and different things of that nature. And so that was how it ended up starting. And, you know, for me, you know, it just became, you know, a way of life. So something crazy happening in Baltimore. It wasn't a
Did you ever go
day.
Into the joint? Did you do any time?
Not by the grace of God, I actually didn't. I had 7 arrests and I had no convictions. In fact, actually, when the Rolling Stone magazine had interviewed me, they asked me what was the most significant place I spoke at. And I said, I could say in front of Mandela's house, or I could say speaking at the White House or at Parliament in England. And I said, but it was actually, or speaking in front of Harvard. I said it was actually when I was asked to speak at my high school, when my principal placed a bet I wouldn't make it to 21. And my counselor said I shouldn't attempt to go to college. And I ended up later coming back as the keynote speaker. And the person they sat next to me was Congressman Elijah Cummings. And when he saw me, he looked at the program. He said, "You got to tell me what you've been doing lately." I said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Because the last time we were sitting next to each other, this was not the situation, because he was my attorney for assault and possession with a handgun. I was his last case he defended when he became a congressman." And so, you know, I feel like I got the I actually almost earned the time that some other people received. And I feel that I was given mercy. I felt that God gave me mercy, brother.
Let me jump in with this. You're in Baltimore and you've been working in the community and you got a history in the streets in terms of what you've been doing. How did you get your degree? What is your doctorate degree in?
Actually, my doctorate is in humanities, and I'm actually going for pastoral counseling. Also now my, bachelor's was in criminal justice and political science, a minor in African history, and my master's was in criminology, juvenile delinquency and prevention.
So how did you get involved in working with the youth in the program called Men Against Murder? How did that start? Tell us a little something about that, please.
Well, I'll tell you about that, man. That was really a crazy situation, you know, because actually I was working with young men. I was working with gang members, but something happened, and it was a civilian in Baltimore, a civilian. This is how it started. A civilian, he actually came home from work. His daughter had told him it was a couple guys that was gang members that lived next door to them. And so they were the Bloods, the bounty hunters. And so he lived next door to him. And so his daughter met him at the door and said, "Dad," he was like, "you know, the guy next door smacked me on my butt." And I told him, "Don't do that." And so he walked over as a man. Well, you know, even he had his little lunchbox with him and everything still, you know, he said, "Look, brothers," he said, I don't disrespect y'all. I would appreciate if you just not put your hands on my daughter."
They take it to so me. Long.
Oh, yeah.
You need to... Who is that? Somebody just came in. Go ahead. Finish, Doc.
Okay. Well, actually, and he told him, he said, I appreciate if you don't put your hands on my door. You smack my door on the butt. And, you know, man, they was like, "Man, get out of my face." So the young man actually called some gang members over and they beat the man up. They beat the working man up, the civilian. And then after that, you know, he called the police. The police said, "Well, the boy that's standing on the porch laughing right now, he didn't do it. So it's nothing that we can do." The police told him, "Just call us if something happened." I mean, which was insane, you know. So that night they burned a trash can on his porch. So he took his family out. They went to a hotel. So the young men broke in his house and actually vandalized the house. I mean, they spray painted, they put their signs on it and everything. And then he ended up actually staying in the hotel until he ran out of money. And then him and his children and his wife, his son and his daughter, they were all sleeping in the car because they had ran out of money to stay in hotels. And when I heard that story, I know the Bible say anger, but sin not. I mean, it just really infuriated me, you know? And I was just like saying, I would have loved to have brought my crew down there to stand on his porch and let them know the beef ain't with this civilian now. See, bullies like messing with people that they feel can't bring them back, no kickback. I'm just like, but you met somebody that I know just about every gang leader in the country. And you know what I'm saying? And I know the people on the streets and the whole nine. And so to me, that was initially how it started. I started getting men together. And I said, just like how the brothers and the homies hang together, we need to be able to break bread together. And when we need each other, we need to be able to mobilize.
So what do y'all do specifically? So one of your groups is called Men Against Murder. What do y'all do specifically to stop murder, or do you stop murder, or try to stop murder? What is it, Men Against Murder? What is it that you do specifically?
Okay, well, aside from trying to be support of people that get into beefs on the front end, that's the one thing. I mean, I know we've done marches. I know we give out resources, but I also had a number that we were giving out that was called 7 Minutes. So I only mainly give it to the ones that are the
following. You say 7 minutes.
It's called 7 minutes. And so I would give out that number to, just like I said, the violent ones. And I said, if you think you might lose your life tonight, or if you think you might take a life, I'm calling in the OG pass and I'm asking for you to give me a call and just give me 7 minutes of your time. And I've had a situation, I said, and I promise and I guarantee you, I can find you a reason to live. And, you know, so being a person that has been on a lot of beef and has dealt with beef, you know, I think that, you know, that was something. And so I started doing it and I started getting calls from people who were telling me off the muscle, we are getting ready to, you know, do what we do, you know, and I would actually, most of the time I would even meet with them. But I would definitely talk with them, trying to talk them down. Because to me, if you call Dr. Ted Sutton and you ain't call Lil Pookie and Lil Black and Lil G Grimy, that means you really don't want to do it. You don't want to kill who social media is saying you need to kill. You don't want to kill the person that somebody's saying, you know, that's in that rap. And I let them know, you know, there's certain things like you need to know that. You don't take a man's life over $100. You don't take a man's life because he says something on social media or because he's with another rap group and they are beefing, you know, as far as rapping and different things of that nature. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm trying to get that message out. So I've had a number of people that called me and I was able to kind of talk them off the ledge at that moment. And so, and I have some other brethren, and if you need us to come to your house, if you need us to stand with you. And, you know, like I had one young man, a brother who called me, and his son had actually messed up a package, really, you know what I'm saying? And it was with one of the, you know, with one of the organizations, I'll say. And I had to broker a deal so that they don't take this brother's life. And so to me, if I can get in on the front, see, the part is the front end. Everybody want to do a march or have a cookout on the back end. But if it's a possibility that you can have a connection with the community and the streets on
in the beginning,
front,
in the beginning,
man, you hit it on the nose, right? Right there alone, that means that we can make a difference, or at least we got a chance.
Let me throw this in. You said that all you need is 70 minutes to mm-hmm. talk to someone. What happens in that 7 minutes? Why do you need 7 minutes to try to convince somebody not to do something foolish?
Well, I'm gonna tell you like this. To me, the number seven has just been sacred for me. When I listen to that, and I know I can't ask him for a half an hour. I know I can't ask him for sometimes even 15 or 10 minutes, but 7 minutes seems to be just long enough, but not too long. And if I can get in there, you know what I'm saying? Because I've been in those situations where if somebody was disrespectful with some, I mean, in fact, just to share this, you know, Richie, this morning, my 13-year-old son, you know what I'm saying? And I call him Payback. He reminds me so much of myself. He was walking to school and a car was coming. And it's an area where it's just one little section that there is no sidewalk. And he stepped on the side to just get out the way of the car. And the man jumped out and was like, hey, get off my grass. You know what I'm saying? Don't you see the sign? Don't. And, you know, my son was like, you know, I was trying to not get hit by the car. He said, well, I don't care about the car. You know what I'm saying? You know, just make sure you stay. And then he said, my son was like, man, just don't say nothing to me. And the man was like, all I know is if you step on my grass again, I'm going to bust you in your head. And I don't know, what did he tell my 13-year-old son, who is a green belt in martial arts, who plays the drums, who's on the honor roll, who plays about four different sports. He plays polo, baseball, tennis, you know, and all this and that, man. And when he said that, man, my son came home. And he was so mad, and he came home and got his bat from baseball. And he was going back around there. And I was like, hold on. I was like, Caleb, what's going on? So he starts to tell me, and I was like, no, I'm going to deal with this. And so I came around there and look, and this was this morning. You know what I'm saying? This was this morning. And I come around there, I knock on the man's door, and he sees him. And he wouldn't even come outside when he saw me. But I ended up talking to him. And I was like saying, like, look, you know, saying, you know, that's my son. And so anybody talking about they might do harm to him, he has a father. Now, a lot of other young men don't have fathers to handle a situation like that. But not only does he have a father, he got a strong father. He got a father that's going to step to adversity, that's going to step to a situation.
But let me throw this in there. What role do you see? You say you got a group called Men Against Murder. Mm-hmm. What role do men, can men play to stop it? Because I know the crime rate in Baltimore has been going up and down.
Yes.
Excuse me. They've been talking about how unsafe it is in certain parts of Baltimore. And we know mm-hmm. that black on black killing has been taking off.
Yes, it
what
has.
What is
yes,
it? How are you able to stop, or are you able to stop some of the killings in Baltimore? And if so, how?
I mean, well, to me, you know, I feel that it is. I haven't lost hope. I know some people just keep on telling me they're going to move to Atlanta. And I said, well, if you bring in the problem with you, you're going to bring the problem there. I'm not moving nowhere. I'm going to stay here and I'm going to fight for our youth because I feel that they're worth it. And so, you know, to me, you know, to bring like-minded men. In fact, even when I just wear my coat, I constantly have my shirt or my coat that has Men Against Murder. I got People Can Change on the front. Because that's dealing with my part. That's dealing with you really looking at Crazy Ted. You're really looking at a person that blew up cars and kicked in doors before. But right now, I believe that God could turn a mess into a miracle. So I'm trying to stand. And you know what? And I don't think you should have to stand alone. We got too many single mothers and grandmothers and foster parents that, you know, their children get into something in high school and they just don't know what to do with it. And you know, and they dealing with gunplay. But the thing is gunplay don't scare me. And it's going to take men that gunplay don't scare you to try to fix this situation. Because it's going to take a Crazy Ted to deal with some of these crazy YNs when they out there. It's going to take a Crazy Ted. Well, I need the title Crazy in there.
You know, you mentioned
some of the crazy stuff that's going on.
At the top, you mentioned some names of like Lil Melvin, the legend in Baltimore, and Dennis Wise, and guys that
I
know both. I know both of them real well.
Them.
Do you have
I saw you at the funeral.
At the Lil Melvin's funeral?
Yes. Weren't you at Lil Melvin's funeral?
I most certainly was.
Because there was another brother, I think they called him Strawberry and some other people, man. I saw some people. I saw Peanut King. I think it was Peanut King. You know what I'm saying? And he's here, you know, doing some work and different things. Slim Butler, I mean, a lot of people, you know, it's been something, man.
Have you been able to reach back into the institutions, man, some of the guys that you grew up with who've been busted as inside of the joint, to pull them in and see what they can do? Because we had a situation here in D.C., in Maryland, rather, where a guy got killed in a gang fight, and his father was away in the federal system doing life, and they were able to contact the father in the federal system who was doing life to get him to call back to his son, whom he hadn't seen in 10 or 15 years, to get his son to not to retaliate, to stop this killing. And he was able to negotiate a peace treaty from prison to stop the killings. Do you have any kind of relationship or any kind of thing going on to connect with those men inside of institutions who can play a role in stopping some of this violence in our streets?
Man, to be real honest with you, the brothers that unfortunately are behind some of these walls, some of these concrete steel walls that I know they wish they could break right through them, man. They are part of the answer. I told the mayor here, they were having a meeting. They were talking about, well, what we need is stiffer. The commission said what we need is stiffer penalties. We need more police officers. And what my answer was, I said, well, no, to be honest with you, what I think is we need is urban youth specialists. They said, well, what's that? I said, I just made the word up. I said, that's people who've been there, done that, wrote the book and starred in the movie, and now they denounce the life now. That's going to play a stronger part with a person that's looking at a person with a suit who never did anything. And you're looking at them like, yo, you can't possibly understand where I am right now. You can't possibly understand what it is when I know I got to eat tonight. And oodles and noodles and tuna fish, I don't even have the hookup.
Are you getting any support from the people in Baltimore, from the powers that be, the politicians and the people in authority? Are you getting any support, man, to stop some of this killing and get other men? Because we got a group in D.C. called OGL, Optimistic Gentlemen and Ladies, where we got men and women who've been in their 20, 30 decades in prison. And they come together to see what they can do. But same thing you just said, use their expertise and experience in the street to stop this, because this is happening all over. We are killing each other more than you can even count, man. It's more people. I just read something yesterday that since George Floyd got killed 5 years ago, more people have gotten killed since George Floyd was killed than before George Floyd was killed by the police.
So the
crime rate of police abusing or killing or taking unfair advantage of taking somebody's life is on the increase. We thought after George Floyd, it went down for a minute. But now the murder rate of blacks being killed by law enforcement is on the increase. It's more now than it was when Floyd got killed. So what are y'all doing in Baltimore to address this particular issue?
Well, I mean, that's key. And actually, I actually work with George Floyd's family. I do something with also his uncle, you know, and I was just speaking at Harvard University addressing a bill with Eric Garner's mother, Trayvon Martin's, one of his family members, and George Floyd's uncle. And I had a chance to address a bill that we're trying to pass that the moment that you are in police custody, if you say you're having a medical issue or you feel that you can't breathe or you feel you might be having a heart attack, they are to immediately give you medical assistance and not say he's faking, not saying hurry up and get up, man, or ain't nothing wrong with you. They are to do that, or they will actually have to be reprimanded in some kind of way. And that's a bill that I just addressed, you know, with that. And people have to understand that the climate has really changed. And when you're dealing with the type of administration that they have here, and you're talking about also, you know, some of the stuff that's been going on with the community and people and how we have been dying, you know, when the Freddie Gray situation happened, it really showed, you know, saying that when the people come together, they got the power.
Yeah.
When the people stop beefing and fighting with each other, because actually, you know who helped me with the riots there? It was the Bloods and the Crips and the BGF, the Black Guerrilla Family. They were the ones that helped me save some people's lives and helped me protect the stores. In the stores. In fact, actually, the commissioner at the time, Commissioner Batts, had asked me to say that a lot of the killings was behind all of the drugs that they stole out of the CVS. And I said, that's not true. That is not true. And I said, and they had put out a letter saying that, oh, the Bloods and the Crips and the BGF have all put a letter together and mailed it saying they're coming together to harm police. And when I talked to him, I called him. I was like, hold on, yo. I said, I can't even talk to you in person. I mean, on the phone. I said, I said, you know, I don't do that. I said, let me talk to you in person. And I asked him, I said, man, did y'all really do? He said, big homie, when have you known us to type a letter about a crime that we are going to do and then mail it to the police? He said, we being set up.
Yeah.
And I actually brought them together. And I said, that's what I thought, because I knew that they wanted sympathy for the police so that they could do martial law. But I ended up bringing them together and we went on television. We went on CNN and we ended up speaking, you know, that they did not come together to try to harm police.
You know, this is you're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM. You listen to Crossroads, and Crossroads addresses the issues of the criminal justice and system and those people impacted by the criminal justice field. Question. You mentioned Freddie Gray, and I know the state's attorney in Baltimore at that time was Marilyn Moseley. And they took her through a thing, and she was on house arrest. In fact, she comes off of house arrest this year and then the next week or two. Have you had any dealings with – wait a minute. Before I get to that, if you want to call in with a question or comment for our guest, Dr. Ted Sutton, who's from out of Baltimore, we're talking about men against murder. The phone number is 202-588-0893. If you want to call in with a question or comment, you can. Marilyn Moseby, she's been on our show once, a couple of times, in fact. She tried to do what she did. I think she got like 34 cops arrested and did all kinds of stuff, and she went against the power structure in Baltimore, and they came after her, man.
She even let go of two guys that was in my crew, which was JR and Mosey, you know what I'm saying, who did 25 years for a crime they did not commit. And they ended up actually coming home. My father actually did most of the funerals for his family members, his mother's funeral, and he could not be there. And so she ended up actually opening up that case and allowing them to be released. And so this is something that, you know, they're going to come after you when you go against the powers that be. And that's why the people have to stand with people who have a voice.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people standing with Marlon Mosby, my man Walter Lomax, Tyrone Boss, and a whole bunch of other folk. And these black female prosecutors in Atlanta and New York, all across the country, black female prosecutors have been catching hell in terms of them going against the system and the power structure. And I was wondering how that impact your program, because if she's no longer there and you're dealing with the old line, the old school
the machine,
and they haven't changed in years. And right fact, what's going on now across the country is like, I grew up in segregation, it was segregated. And I'm telling you, man, it felt just like it, what it felt like in the 50s. It feels like now what's going on, and things are being rolled back. And I was wondering, how have you been able to recruit people to help you to do what you're doing? Because what impact do you think y'all are having on stopping some of the killers in Baltimore?
Well, you know what? Well, to me, the impact has also not just been here, but it's also been, you know, of different places in the country. I do a lot of work in Chester, PA. I do a lot of work, you know, in, you know, going to different, you know, places, you know, all around, you know, even down in Huntsville, Alabama. And what the part that I love is when I wear my jacket through that airport, and when I come off, you know, off that plane, and I'm hitting the ground, and man, let me tell you, I've met people when they see that big letters, Men Against Murder. Somebody even asked me, why do you wear it? And I said, because I want people to know where I stand. And so I have people who are good people who come up to me and say, man, how can I get a jacket? And I said, well, this ain't just about the fashion expression for me. This is a message that I want I want to attract some men who are not afraid. I need somebody that has a backbone and not a wishbone, who is saying that I'm going to actually stand and I'm not telling them to jump in front of every bullets and this, that, and the third. And even though I had, when you look at my record, I stopped a carjacker from carjacking somebody. I stopped a mugger from mugging somebody. I ran in a burning building and saved a girl who was on fire. She was on fire, brother. She was on fire. And so to me, I feel like a superhero, man. God is, see, I'm not even supposed to be here. I should be dead. I should be gone right now. And one of my closest, you know, guys that was with me is serving life plus 20 in a prison underneath the ground in Texas on something called no human contact.
Yes.
And he's done the last 20 years in solitary confinement. And actually, when his next parole hearing comes up, I want us to, you know, to put out a media blast. I want people to call, write letters. And because I just think that it's inhumane to have somebody in solitary confinement for over. And in fact, when he takes a shower, they bring a box to his cell.
Yes.
They put him in a box and they wheel the box to the shower. And so to me, you know, I just think certain things are just inhumane. And you had them, they sent Michael Vick to jail for what they were doing with dog fighting. And but you can allow this man to be in a cell and with no human contact for over 20 years, that's insane. And so to me, you know, I need the help from brothers who are incarcerated for the shot callers that's in there.
Have you reached out to the brothers? Because that's what we've been doing down here. We know that we got guys that did 40, 50, 60 years in prison, decades, man. And these guys function as mentors inside the institution.
And
they got a role to play now. Have you reached out to the guys inside to see what role they could play to help you in the community? What success have you had?
Yes, and I've had a lot of great success. And in fact, we had something that was being done, and it was called Ceasefire. And it was like they have a weekend that they, you know, they have people and they put out flyers and they say, we ain't going to do no killings this weekend. And I said, but that's good, but you got to have the right people at the table. So until you get them brothers that's the shot callers that's inside to tell their BGs, their baby gangsters, that we are not doing nothing this weekend. And I'm putting it out there right now, you know, saying, and we need the assistance. I had a situation with a young man. He came to his grandmother's house. He was on those mollies. He was high. He knew she just got a check. She opened the door, just had the chain on it. She was like, I can see in your eyes, you ain't right now. He ended up breaking the chain in there, getting on top of his grandmother. He took his flag, the bandana, and actually choked her out and then went in her safe, he in her bra, and took the money out. And when I heard that situation, I reached out to his OG, was with the Rolling 60s. I said, look, let me tell you this. I'm just letting you know what he did. And then I told him, so some people probably going to holler at him. And I said, now, you know, and they going to, you know, they going to.
Did he kill his grandmother? Did he kill her?
He didn't kill his grandmother. He just choked her out. But he didn't kill her, and he left. I guess he went out and got high and this, that, and the third. But the thing that got me is when I talked to the brother, you know, he told me, he said, oh, nah, homie. He was like, he got to go. He was like, oh, no, we ain't have it. Now I had to now broker a deal for the young man's life that really I was just calling to let him know that I ain't starting a war with the Rolling 60s and Crips. But I'm letting you know one of your cubs is getting ready to get hands put on him. I'm sure, you know what I'm saying? But I told him, I said, big homie, I said, dead men don't learn lessons. And the grandmother don't want him dead. I said, so we're going to have to work something out. But I was letting you know, but I saw how quickly that took a turn. He was like, oh, he just told me automatically, oh, no, big homie. He said, he got to go. I'm not having that on my set. And okay. I had to let him know, you know, dead men don't learn lessons.
Well,
brother.
Let me throw this in, is that what can be done, man? Every community in America is facing violence in the community.
Yes, they are.
The carjackings, these killers, and all the killers ain't about drugs. It's about attitudes, egos, territory, and that kind of stuff. What is it, man, that people can do who's listening to you, who want to stop this in their community? You in Baltimore, our show goes around the world. Mm-hmm. And we meet people in all 50 states. And then last week, we had somebody from New Jersey. This week, you from Baltimore. Next week, we have somebody from California. But all the issues seem to be the same in all these communities.
Yes,
what can people do who are listening to you, Dr. Ted Sutton? What can they do to stop the violence and the killings in their particular neighborhood?
Well, you know what, to me, now this is my own personal view, you know, with this, because I go all over, you know, just like I said, to Toronto and in the federal prison. And, you know, I go in the juvenile detention center all over. I just got back from Georgia yesterday. And I was in Annapolis, Maryland, you know, the other day in the juvenile detention area called Sheltenham.
Yeah, I know about Sheltenham. Yes.
Okay, I was just there. Now, my key to me, it's about identifying the people who actually have influence. To me, you know, if you know certain ones, meaning it's levels to this thing, meaning I want to get with the brothers who are the shot callers and the brothers. I would love, if you got a connection and I could get into DC, I would love to go into one of the facilities. I would love to.
We'd like to have you. You know,
I would love to. Please, I'm just putting that out there, you know, off the muscle. You know what I'm saying? Because, see, most of the time I go to places that actually call me. I'm supposed to be actually going to Rikers Island coming up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I would love to go to where you're talking about, because I caused problems at Chapter 3 and things when I was in D.C. or the Kilimanjaros back in the day. And so to me, you know, yes, I want to be part of the solution now. But if we can actually get some of the ones who are incarcerated, some of these good brothers, and I hate that people just feel that because they in jail, they a horrible person or terrible. No, that some of them just made a bad decision. And you know what? And people need the society, if they're going to actually truly embrace them, they got to show them that we're going to accept you when you come home. Now, you know, so to me, if we can get the brothers that are against this and actually, you know, we can see how we can fight this, you know, saying we got to get it on different levels. The brothers that have influence in prison, the brothers that have influence on the streets, and then the YNs, them YNs, them young boys. You know what I'm saying? We need to really also get to somebody that have the influence in that circle. Because to me, until you can get the ones that actually influence the ones, that's the real problem. And that's why I wear my shirt all the time. I want people to be connected with me.
Huh?
You know?
Okay, we can wait a minute. Take my wife. She's calling
sure,
in.
Sure.
Hold on a minute. Hello, wifey. Are you there?
Yes, I am. I've been listening to the show, and it's been wonderful. I have one question I'd like to ask Dr. Ted. Is he having the same challenge that we're having here, getting funding so these guys can do the work?
Actually, yes. So I've had different people from the mayor to different politicians. In fact, the previous three mayors promised me that I would definitely get funding at some point, and they never did it. But I will say this, and on that end, we have it's very cliquish. So you got groups that can get money. The real problem is the ones that normally get the funded don't have the boots on the ground, and they are not really connected. So they dealing with choir boys. They dealing with boys on the honor roll. They dealing with young men that ain't never get in trouble and ain't going to never get into trouble. What we need is the ones who can get the funded, and we need somebody to build an infrastructure to actually get the resources and the funding to the people who are really, truly doing the work. Because if the community don't know you, but you getting money for working with the community, that's part of the problem right there. We need to have the people held accountable. I've actually done videos with people for people who say they working with gang members in the Park Heights area. And I go up in the park, that's my area too. That's one of my areas. I did a video and I say, okay, then I'm going around to all the sets. Have you ever heard of these people? They was like, no, who are these? I said, well, they're the ones that's getting funding for working with gang members in this area. And they was like, well, big homie, we ain't never heard of. We know you, but we don't know them.
Well, and let me throw this in. The minute this show is over at 12 o'clock, every mm-hmm. Tuesday we meet here at the Chili Bowl with a group called Time for Everybody to Get Involved. Mm-hmm. And we've been dealing with the same thing for the past 7 months. One of the owners, Kamal Ali and Kenny Barnes, Tyrone Park, and some more folks. We've been meeting to come up with a plan, and we'd like to work with you in Baltimore, the people in PG County, the people in Fauquier Hill County, everywhere we can. You're right down the road.
We'd like to invite you in
with what you're doing, because we're talking about the same thing. The killings and the shootings and on the business district all over the city. I just had a niece, man, killed 3 weeks ago. She was sitting in a house with three grandbabies, and somebody shot through the window, and they killed her. She's 54 years old, an ordained minister. And these kind of killings, and I had six people in my family killed in the past few years. We've been trying. We'd like to invite you, Dr. Sutton, to come over. Or we can do it by Zoom. Then meet with the gentleman here. Time for us all to get involved, because we're all fighting the same problem, but we need to stop working in silos and come together. Because collectively, we can do this. But before we go any further, we got one caller on. We'll take our first caller. Question or comment, please, and your name.
Hello. Is it me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you so much. This is Julian Harris. I'm actually a close follower of, I don't want to call Crazy Ted, but Dr. Ted's cousin, Malik Zulu Shabazz. This is Julian Harris. We started Black Worker-Owned Cooperative. We're a cooperative.
Yes.
We've been trying to pass the word to the brothers and the sisters that the problem all of our communities around the country face is economic. These young men, as Dr. Ted said, they don't want to go out. They can't get ramen noodles. They can't feed themselves. They cannot get jobs. The capitalistic system is broke. Until we start creating worker-owned cooperatives so these shot callers and these shooters and what have you in the community can leave the dope game behind and can start small businesses together, where the people who do the work are the ones who are leading. As we saw with the Not Effing Around Coalition, the Grandmaster Jay, all the oppressor had to do was just remove him. And you haven't seen that coalition since. When it's just leadership alone, it's like the old saying goes, take the head and the body will follow. If we can create coalitions, as you just said, of worker-owned cooperatives, where if you have a barbershop, imagine if the entire city of Baltimore, all the barbers came together and created one company where they all ran it. All the barbers.
Come on, brother.
You took one.
That's heavy. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you created a concept where all the landscapers came together, they all joined as a syndicate, one business, and instead of doing syndicates and things like that for the crack game and the cocaine game, you just take that same concept and put it in business. You would able to employ all of the drug dealers, all of the stick-up kids, all of the people in the society whose society has forgotten, who can't go and fill out a resume. You would just say, hey, come in. You are now a business owner. You have a vote on everything that's done here. And then you can take that across every industry, real estate agents, all of the things that we're out there doing to make money alone, completely alone. If we all came together and formed worker-owned cooperatives where the businesses were run by the people who run them, and the votes were made, every employee, one vote, and then majority rules on those decisions, we could stop all of this.
Man, and I'm going to tell you, you're hitting it on the nose, because I spoke at Rick Ross's house when they had the car show. I spoke to some young people and things, but it was one of the young guys. He was so impressed. He said, man, his assistant, did you see his watch? He was talking amongst himself, and he was like, his watch was $100,000. And I said, well, first of all, we shouldn't have to tell you what the price is. And I said, but this is how I said, I'm going to be honest with you. I said, that's cool. I said, but that don't impress me. I said, I'm going to tell you what impresses me. I said, if he was to get four families, I said, have them write up a business plan and then invest $25,000 into each family so that their great grandchildren can eat. I said, you know, with a business, and you will also own a portion of it. To me, that impresses me. I said, not having a watch that when you, it's only impressed in the hood, and everybody in the hood, I guarantee you, if somebody know how much that watch is, they're going to be trying to cut your throat for it. And I said, so to me, because when I've gone around to England, South Africa, different places that I've worked with in the country, the gang members that I've worked with have said one exact thing. They told me three things. They said, big homie, I had one that was crying to me. He said, man, if I could just have a way to provide for my family and I didn't have to carry a weapon because of where I live. He said, man, I will walk away from the gangs in a minute.
Now, you said it. Now, you said the key.
Two things.
You said it. The answer to what we're talking about, or one of the main answers, is employment, economic development, entrepreneurship. You got folk who are broke, man. And with what's going on now about laying off all these federal workers, shutting down programs. I've been running some programs for a while, and we just got the word that we had to shut down our program. We had to lay off everybody, man. We had one day to get out. This thing is happening all over across the country. Jobs reduce crime. Jobs reduce gun violence. If you got a job, you ain't got time to be on the corner or be hanging out.
Come on, brother.
So we need economics. So and they know what it is. Then they come back and say, we do a study. That's like saying your house on fire. You call 911 and the fireman comes and say, we can't come in yet. We got to do a survey and the building is burning down. You don't need no survey when the building is on fire. Get them out the fire first.
Come on.
Then do your survey. So we know that. Go ahead.
I was going to say they had a comedy and it was called I'm Gonna Get You Sucker.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And but the key part that this one of the brothers said, he said, man, the brothers went in with guns. He said, and they came out with jobs. And it was just that one pivotal moment. He was just so pro-black. He was just so, you know, for the fight. And he said, but they went in with guns. And I was just like saying, because to be honest with you, to being able to provide for your family.
That's the key. There you go.
Constantly looking over your shoulder because you got something in your dip or because you got something under the seat. And it's hard to be truly keep your head up as a man. When you get pulled over, man, I hold my head up. I know I ain't dirty, and if you put it in, if you find anything dirty, you was a dirty cop, and you put it in there. So I hold my head up, and I let them know, you know what I'm saying, you know how I stand. And so that's what really, you know what I'm saying, part of being a man is I told a group of brothers in Philly, and I said, you know what to me? I said I was doing my daughter's hair when she was little, and I couldn't get the beret on. I said, I got a master's degree. You know what I'm saying? I'm working on a diet. I said, I can't not get these barrettes in. But when I looked at her in the mirror standing in front of me, man, I said, now this is gangster. This is gangster.
What is something
walking,
house?
Walking your son to school is gangster. Bringing groceries home to your family, that's gangster.
Yeah.
So we got to change the scenario on that.
There you go. What is Sutton House? We got a couple of minutes. You want to explain? You're the CEO and founder of Sutton House and Visions, Inc. And you're a trained, certified gang intervention specialist. What is Sutton House?
Okay, well, Sutton House to me is like the umbrella of everything I'm doing. People Can Change, youth movement, men against murder, and also first line strategies. And so what we do, we do everything from we give out, you know, food. We give one of the largest toy giveaways during Christmas. We give out, you know, a lot of the different things. But we also do a free computer literacy class for the seniors and for the young and for everybody in between. And so and then we do that. And then we periodically give resource fairs. In fact, actually, I wanted to come to Ben's Chili Bowl and actually get me one of them vegetarian chilies too, you know what I'm saying, while you was up there. But I know I have a resource fair that I'm giving now. And so when I leave here, you know, I got the people getting it started at 11. And so what we do is we have resources that we even have people organizations that we do partnerships that give people employment on the spot. I also help give out suits to people, and we also have the van that comes up with the expungements. And so we try to hit it on different ends, and then I'm also constantly giving out, you know, the information for if anybody has a situation, you know, I don't care what the situation is and how bad the beef is, please reach out to us and call us, because a lot of times you need a strategist to, you know, when you were at war. I told them two books that I like was The Bible and The Art of War, Sun Tzu. And so to me, you know, along with all of this stuff, while people are playing checkers, we got to be playing chess. And so for me, you know, we're doing all of these different things, helping with jobs. And we even have a businessman that helps people to kind of put together their business. So if you have a business, but you don't know how to fill out the paperwork as far as a 501c3 or LLC or 501c4, whatever it is, you know, saying we'll have somebody that could kind of help you out. And we even have the computers. You don't have to pay anything. So all of the events, we feed people, and we don't charge a dime.
All righty. We got about 2 minutes left. Dr. Ted Sutton, he's with the Sutton House and Men Against Murder. He's been traveling all around the world at Harvard, South Africa, different ways, working with various community organizations to try to stop some of this foolishness and keep our community safe. Dr. Sutton, you got 2 minutes before we leave out. You want to give us some closing information and how people can contact you if they're interested in following up on what we're talking about?
Yes, you know what I'm saying? Actually, you know, I want to just let you know, if you want to contact me, I'm on all of the social medias as Dr. Ted Sutton or Ted Sutton, you know, and that's the IG and Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and, you know, all of these different things. Also, if my website is suttonhousevision.com, that is suttonhousevision.com. And also to go to some of those grandmothers, and I know I'm dealing with a younger grandmother now, but for all of these, you know, nanas and big mama and different things, if you having a problem with your grandson and the whole nine, here, you know, I got a number, 410-428-3894.
Get the number again. Get the number.
410-428-3894. Please reach out to me, because I believe that, you know, God can turn a mess into a miracle when you look at that one.
Thank you. We've been talking to Dr. Ted Sutton, the CEO and founder of Sutton House Vision, Inc., trained, certified gang intervention specialist. And our topic was Men Against Murder and the work that he's doing locally and nationally and internationally. We want to thank you for joining us, Dr. Sutton.
Thank you. We will be
calling you to join us back.
All right.
And folks, please, if you listen to what the good doctor said, we all got to get involved. And the minute the show is over, we'll be meeting here. Ted, I'd like to invite you. I got to come to attend the meeting at the Ben's Chili Bowl that we have about.
Yes.
Let's all get involved. And we need to work closer with Baltimore, PG County, and other counties to see what we're all doing the same thing. We got the same mission. And we know to change this is economics. We need funding. People need jobs, need houses, a place to stay. I don't care how much we can stop somebody from being violent. If he ain't got no place to stay and nothing to eat, it doesn't matter what you say to him.
Come on, brother.
So we got to do this. I want to say thank you, Dr. Ted Sutton, for joining us this morning. We will be having you back. Thank you for joining us. And when the show is over, I will call you and give you this number so you can join us hopefully by Zoom. Because every Tuesday we meet here at the world famous Ben's Chili Bowl.
Well, I want to come in person. I want to come in person, but you know, I'll take a Zoom. I will take a Zoom. But
we'll work it out. Ain't no problem. You're right down the road, brother. I want to thank you for joining us.
That's right.
Our time is up. Nikichi wasn't able to join us, and also my wife. But don't worry about it. We got another hour coming up. And this next hour is with the world-famous Dr. Benjamin Chavis.
Yes.
This man's been a part of civil rights, the hip-hop movement, the Million Man March, Wilmington 10. This man has been a part of historical things all through his lifestyle. So stay tuned for our interview with Dr. Ben Chavis. This is Roach Brown. Stay tuned to Crossroads. We're coming up in our second hour. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
June is Caribbean American Heritage Month. Thus, CAWI, CPN, ICS, AFI, and Africa World Art Project present the 23rd DC Caribbean Film Fest, June 6th to June 12th, at AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring. The festival showcases the best in Caribbean cinema with films such as the U.S. premiere of Fanon and more. The DC Caribbean Film Fest, June 6th to June 12th. Information at afi.com/silver. Or 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Everybody say bless, say bless, say
bless.
Yeah!
Thank you, family. We're so grateful for each and every one of you who made a pledge during our spring membership drive. Though we didn't quite reach the finish line, your love carried us far. Your pledges, your presence, your belief in WPFW. They remind us that this station is more than radio. It's a rhythm, a refuge, a revolution. We trust you'll keep walking with us, dancing with us, building with us. Because this community-powered radio station rises with you and only with you. Thank you for keeping the beat alive.
We're lost in the city.
This is Rev Yearwood, and I am so excited to announce our new climate show, Think 100% Climate Friday. This show will keep you up to date on everything climate justice related in a rapidly changing world. We will discuss breaking news and updates on environmental issues, the climate crisis, COVID-19, and politics. This show will make tangible how the climate crisis is already impacting our lives and what you can do about it. So tune in every Friday at 9 o'clock a.m. right here on WPFW 89.3, your jazz and justice station.
WPFW, in collaboration with the Josephine Butler Center, present the Jazz and Justice Festival, Sunday, June 22nd, noon until 8 p.m. An activation of music, poetry, social justice teach-ins, visual art, wellness, children's activities, and more in Malcolm X Park. WPFW personalities Saiz Kamaluddin, Kaba Soul Singer, and Proverbs Reggae Band will be among the performers, with sets by DJ Lance Reynolds and Underdog. Also featured will be an art show curated by Adrian Ferguson of The Art of Noise and a community curated by Milani Douglas. Stay tuned to WPFW for updates and details.
Hi, I'm Robin Holden.
Hi, I'm Miyuki Williams.
WPFW and Parks and People invite you to the Jazz and Justice Festival, Sunday, June 22nd, from 12 noon until 8 p.m. at Malcolm X Park.
It's a family-friendly celebration of culture, community, and resistance during the week of Juneteenth and the summer solstice.
Experience the power of WPFW's on-air voices brought to life with featured speakers Anthony Browder and Reverend Lennox Yearwood.
Live performances by Saiz Kamaluddin, Kaba, and Proverbs, plus DJ Lance Reynolds and Underdog, keeping the vibe alive.
Connect in the community led by Milani Douglas. Explore art curated by Adrian.